From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Want the body massage.
Sitius, Altius, Fortius. I am Paul.
I am Storm.
And we are going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, it is Tuesday evening, July 7th, 2009.
And this is show number 047.
Ripped through the big board, which is really only two things anymore. We have 188 minions in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions.
Yay!
Where's Poochie? Who's Poochie? Poochie Corner, who's talking about us? We actually had someone who asked us, we're now taking suggestions from the Twitter sphere about what we should talk about. I won't use that term again.
Right.
Hootie D asked, what became of the panty quilt idea? And I had joked that my wife, Gillian, may want to make a quilt out of the panties.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, she does. And,
is she a quilter? I had not known her to be a quilter.
I will say she has never made a quilt. We do not yet own a sewing machine, but she has expressed interest in recent months to get one to do various things that you do with sewing machines, sewing. And she cottoned up to the idea.
Oh, cottoned up to it. Wow.
Yeah, I just thought I'd pull that little phrase
like,
out.
I don't know, Huey Long or something.
Yeah. I'm feeling,
actually, you're not talking like Huey Long, but I couldn't think of anybody else you were talking like. So.
No, that's all right.
I don't know, Samuel Clemens or something.
No, King Fish Me Up.
Yeah.
Well, we're straight into the fresh.
Sure.
Now, we have a number of topics that... people have suggested. I have a few written down.
Oh, I will mention, you may hear some noise in the background. My daughter is here in the room with me. She couldn't sleep, so I told her she could lay here as quietly as she could while we record. She's doing a good job of it, but with some summer sniffles, you might hear that. That is not a prowler or an error with the sound file. It is, in fact, a human being behind me.
So half of us won't be doing any goddamn cursing tonight, isn't that right?
That is correct, sir.
Okay.
Don't you feel all smug?
Not really. Okay. Before I dump my topics on you, do you have anything that you would like to talk about out of the gate?
Not really to start off with. I may kick in when we start going to the Twitter topics and stuff, but I don't have anything pressing that I can think of.
Okay, then I'll shoot a few out, and some of them are just little bonbons, and others are big Trojan horses.
They would be bonbons.
Bonbon? Mais oui.
Bonbon!
Okay, Todlin, carried over from last week.
Mm-hmm.
You Must Fight the Bear, also carried over from last week.
Mm-hmm.
Someone asked about that topic. Italy or France? To Infinity and Beyond? And Goodbye, Sister Disco.
Try Todlin.
Todlin. This is very straightforward. Nothing crazy or hidden with this one. We're going to Chicago for a vacation at the end of the month.
Ah, of course.
And very excited. Now, of course, you and I, Paul, we've been to Chicago a number of times.
Yes.
And, of course, we've done everything there is to do in Chicago already.
Well, of course, because we are cosmopolitan types.
But we know we haven't, and Gillian has never been there before.
Mm.
Now, we already have, like, the tourist card that gives you access to, you know, all the big stuff.
Yeah. Does the tourist card involve pasting a great big L on your foreheads?
Well, you don't have to, like... wear it on your chest or declare, I have the Chicago douchebag card. You just present it when you need to.
You do have to declare that aloud at least every 10 minutes.
Well, we heard that's a Chicago thing.
Yeah.
And whether or not you have it, you tend to declare that. It's sort of like, what's up for Chicago?
Right.
And you know, we're not going to do the douchiest douche things. But we are going to see, like, we already have tickets for a Cubs game in Wrigley Field, a day
Lovely.
Game.
Lovely.
But
no, oh, you know what? Oh, I have a question.
Yeah.
Are you going to go to the brand new observation
yes.
cubes
you
at
laugh,
the top of the Sears Tower?
You laugh at our Chicago douche carts, but the Sears Tower observation deck is one of the items, and there was an article in our hometown paper about that very thing. In case mm-hmm. you folks out there don't know what Paul's referring to. Is, you know, like that Grand Canyon experience they have now where you can go out on glass over the Grand Canyon?
Yeah, there's like a glass walkway that goes out over something like a 3,000, 4,000 foot drop or something like that.
Yeah, it's a healthy first step if you were to not be on a safe, enclosed thing.
Yeah.
And they've done something similar with the Sears Tower where there are these glass cubes that jut out from the outer wall of the Sears Tower, where you can look straight down through, I guess it's an inch of glass or something like that.
Yeah,
we are totally gonna do that. No extra charge for it. No extra charge.
I know, that's insane.
If you have your Chicago douche card.
Well, if only I had mine.
But yeah, that's part of the plan. But if folks have like. Super secret, awesome things to do that wouldn't be, you know, I'm not looking for, you know, the Applebee's around the corner from our house.
Oh, you gotta go to Pizzeria Uno.
And, you know, we probably will do stuff like that. But if there is something that maybe you're a native and there's a park that's especially cool or something that's happening at the end of July.
Something that doesn't lie on the beaten path.
Yeah, or maybe it's hidden on the beaten path. Like you have to take a shovel to the beaten path.
So it's like under the beaten path.
Right. Sort of like the land of the lost of the Miracle Mile.
There you go.
And we're staying on the Gold Coast, if that means anything to you in terms of, you know, things that we might do that are close. So that's all that was. That's a naked request for information.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that.
Okay. Next.
Let's go with, I don't want to get into the big topic I have here yet.
Okay.
Unless we do. To infinity and beyond.
Okay.
Okay. Well, first of all, before we get to the actual topic, the title that I gave to it refers to, of course, Toy Story. And Buzz Lightyear, that was his big catchphrase.
Mm-hmm.
So this is 1 week late, but our good friend Brendan Milburn had asked for the podcast, what are your favorite Pixar movies and or shorts? And, well, I guess since I'm already talking, I'm doing all the talking. I'm feeling very self-conscious about that.
Yeah, I noticed there's a lot fewer wave lines on my recording bar as I see it go by. But that's okay because it's a change of pace. Because usually I'm the gabby one.
No, usually I think it's pretty well distributed. We take turns being gabby.
I suppose that's true. But that's okay. Go ahead. You've got the ball. Run with it.
All right. That's right.
Red Grange.
I'm a point guard, and I'm passing and catching and things. Cause
come on, Bronco Nagurski, speaking of Chicago.
What winners do is they pass the ball. Anyway, little topical humor.
Hey-o.
Which won't make sense a year from now. Okay. My favorite Toy Story is definitely it, and I think I've talked about it in a previous podcast, that it's not only one of my favorite Pixar movies, it's one of my favoritest movies of all time. Personally, I've never seen a Pixar movie I didn't like. I've seen all of them except for Up, and I'm chomping at the bit to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite short is Knick Knack. I'm going to say the one with the Santa Claus in the snow globe.
Yep.
So, Paul?
Well, funny you mentioned Toy Story. The reason it's not my favorite, which is not that I don't like it, but when my oldest daughter was extremely young, she never slept well. Like she wouldn't sleep for more than about 90 minutes at a pop for a very long time. And one of the few things that would keep her occupied was Toy Story. And also one of the few things she would fall asleep to was Toy Story. So there was an extremely long stretch where I probably have seen, maybe not end to end because I would fall asleep too, but certainly
10 minute mark is now.
I've run the movie Toy Story through my VCR.
Yep.
Because that's what we had at the time. Back in them days, literally probably at least 100 times.
So it no longer has any magical effect for
it. It sort of lost meaning at a certain point. You know,
right.
when I have the entire script committed to memory.
That makes me a little sad.
I still love it. Don't get me wrong.
I'm not saying that you're a Toy Story hater or anything like that.
Yeah.
That's a good question there that no one has asked and we haven't written down. It's a spontaneous moment. What are some other movies like that you've just seen too much that they no longer have impact?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
good question.
For me, and I think a lot of folks out there, actually watching Monty Python and the Holy Grail, I still watch it now and then,
mm-hmm.
but you know it so well that it... Like, you're never going to recapture the magic of the first time you saw it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the way to ask it. Cloverfield, I've only seen it the one time, but I know if I watch it again, I would just not have the same experience with it.
Yeah, yeah. Good question. And let us know, podcastees. Is that the right term?
Sure.
But to get back to my the question, yes. My favorite Pixar film, hands down, is The Incredibles.
Really?
I could give a bunch of reasons, but frankly, I just think it is phenomenally written, phenomenally directed, phenomenally acted, cast within a farthing, he said, coining a phrase. That movie, to me, just does not take a wrong step from start to finish.
Yeah, you know, I know why, and you're not being honest.
Why is that?
Because you have a crush on Sarah Vowell. That's why.
Yeah, that's exactly it. On Sarah Vowell. That and the fact that I have Mr. Incredible underoos.
Yeah, and oddly, you had them like 10 years before they.
Yeah,
came out
I know. And
movie.
You know what?
Yeah.
The commercials don't lie. They are fun to wear.
Yep. You and your underwears.
Mm-hmm.
Underoos.
So there's that.
Yeah. How about short?
Probably Knick Knack as well.
Yeah, it was sort of a watershed. I still remember, I think it was early in the Da Vinci days, when Pixar was just putting out the shorts. Really, I guess their aim was to, I don't know, let's see what we can do with this stuff. But even then, the storytelling was there.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's cool when you, and we knew it at the time, that they were doing something really special, and you knew that eventually it was going to be more than just these shorts. And every once in a while, probably only a dozen times in your life, most people, if you're lucky, you'll realize that. That you're seeing something at its very earliest tadpole stage.
Yep.
That it's going to grow into a really big tadpole.
Yep. And that actually ties in tangentially to, I've mentioned this on the Twitter, and I will mention it here. As many of you know, at our last show in San Francisco, I had put the call out on Twitter to try and get Adam Savage of Mythbusters to come to our show. And in fact, we did manage to get him to come. He had a great time. And I would go so far as to say he is a good friend of ours, a good friend of
BFFs,
the band's now.
Yes.
Yeah. Which, you know, isn't that great? Paul's dropping names. But that's the beauty of having a modicum of celebrity. A sliver of celebrities, you can try and work it for your own ends.
So I
have put out the new challenge for our next show with Jonathan Coulton in San Francisco. Which I believe will probably be early 2010, though we don't have a scheduled date. That's sort of when we're shooting for, I think. For that show, the goal I have set is to get as many Pixar directors and or Mucky Mucks as we can, you know, like recognizable names from Pixar, to show up at the concert. The target number is 5.
Yep.
Put it in the book. Mark it down.
Now, you're much more of a star fucker than I am.
However,
I don't feel at all bad about the habit that we're developing. And
yes.
The reason is...
I've got a reason, too, and I bet it's the same. You go ahead.
That it's not for a gratuitous reason. It's that these are people that we genuinely think are... I hate the word simpatico, but
yep.
That you have a similar ethic or that you just really dig what they do so much that
yep.
it would just be awesome to not meet them because of their celebrity, but because of what they're doing.
Exactly. That's, or, you know, they just seem like minds, fellow yes. travelers, what have you. Yes, exactly. It's not just for the sake of having met the famous person and say, I know this person.
We met MC Hammer. Or, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but, you know, there it is nonetheless. I've made that call. Oh, the 10-minute mark was roughly 5.5, 6 minutes ago.
I actually declared it right on the 10-minute mark as you were discussing your disdain for Toy Story.
I gotcha. Sorry, I missed that.
No, that's all right.
You know, I seldom pay attention to anything you say, so.
Well, that's kind of what makes this whole project work, you know.
Yeah.
The tension of us not listening to each
that's
other.
That's right. I'm going to jeté over to another topic.
Sure.
Suggested by the Twitter, because it does bear a certain relation. And I'm also going to bring us a little early to the Paul and Storm recommends section.
All right.
Because Joseph E. Bennett asked what our favorite TV shows are.
Ah, yeah.
And this is the part where Paul talks about The Wire. Neither my wife nor I had seen The Wire for some time, even though all of our close white friends, our close white suburbanite friends who have seen it, sung its praises, up and down how incredible it was. And a couple of months back, we finally, bit the bullet and started watching. And I mean to tell you, everything you have heard about the show, it is all that and more. It really is just a tremendous, wonderful television show I'm not going to go on and on and on and on about it. It's just, it's so well written, and it's the kind of show, you know, you either like this kind or not, that A, it really makes you work to pay attention and enjoy mm-hmm. it and watch it. Like, yeah. You can't passively watch it like a CSI, like, yeah. Oh, look, pretty graphics. I mean, you know, they will drop a bit of information in episode 1 and then casually reference it in episode 6.
Yep.
Or, you know, they'll drop some sort of clue in season 1, episode 10, and it comes back around again in season 2, episode 5, and suddenly makes sense, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the characters are, you know, nobody is 100% good, nobody's 100% bad, everybody is flawed and complex, and if that's the kind of thing you like, it is really, really well done.
And I feel like I'm about to step into a time machine, or I already have, because you and your infinite kindness are sending me season 1.
That I am.
Once you're done with it. And
that
I get the
I
feeling
am.
That several weeks
I'm done with it.
Now.
I actually just need it. I gave it to my mom to convert her, and now she's a convert. And so now I need... Actually, the only thing that is keeping me from sending it to you is I need to get a padded envelope for it, and I have not yet made it to the Staples week.
Such a thin line, a wire, if you will, or not. God, I wish I hadn't said that.
Yeah, shame upon you.
I feel shamed.
What
anyway,
is your favorite TV show these days, Storm?
Well, you know, just for the record, and everybody should know this, I hate television, all right? You
mm-hmm.
know, I really do. And it happened in the 80s, I guess.
After they took the A-Team off the air?
No, A-Team will always live on in my heart. No, it wasn't that. I guess it was just part of my process of reinvention or rebelling against myself. I left like popular music. I got completely fed up with sitcoms, which was pretty much all that was on television at the time. I just didn't look back. Now, my wife loves television.
Mm-hmm.
And... she has, I wouldn't say she's gotten me back into television, but I've at least been able to get over my prejudices enough to have an open mind. And I do mm-hmm. pride myself on having an open mind.
Right.
So I got very much and still do enjoy Lost. coming to a close. That's good. You know, they're heading somewhere with it. I'm glad they're finishing up. I've talked at length in the past about Supernatural. You can go ahead and laugh.
Nope. I won't mock it. Well, not on the air.
That's fine. You can mock it if you like. You know, it doesn't detract from my enjoyment of anything for it to be mocked. Well, with some exceptions.
Yeah.
And I hate reality shows. The only ones I've ever watched that I've enjoyed have been some of the cooking ones. I've watched, I guess, the early seasons of Top Chef.
Mm-hmm.
In general, shows like that, once you get past the first season, usually, maybe the second season, I find they become formulaic and the contestants are very aware of how the game is played, and it's sort of okay, this one is going to be the wacky avocado on the head guy, you know, or whatever it is.
Oh, that old trope.
So roll.
Oh, dear.
Full disclosure time. You're probably wondering why we were talking about wacky avocado guy and now we're all like this. The reason is, for some reason, my recording rig just stopped recording.
Yep.
And we had this awesome discussion about something which we're not going to try to reconstruct because the magic is gone.
Yeah, it's completely gone.
But I will say that it had to do with our relative loss of weight or not loss of weight, and that Paul is kind of off the hook. Anyway,
fair enough. And it also involved the Beyonce Knowles diet of water and cayenne pepper.
Oh, right. So
we would be remiss if we didn't mention that.
Let's go to the next thing. If I didn't finish my point about television, that's my own damn
fault. I'm sure it wasn't a very good point anyway.
No, I make a point not to.
And I don't know if we stopped before or after this, but Venture Brothers also.
Oh, yeah. I do consider Venture Brothers to be television, and that I am looking forward to that. But in general, there's not much I'm really looking forward to in television.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's closed out.
Yep.
Do you want to do that big one, or should you want to do some of the little ones? How are you feeling?
Well, we're already theoretically 22-ish minutes in. How big is the big one?
Well, maybe we'll just breeze through it.
All right.
This is Goodbye Sister Disco. And I kind of felt, you know, feel like I don't want to talk about Michael Jackson, all right? But I feel like it's a big enough cultural marker that it's at least worth acknowledging.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, everybody knows what happened, so we're not going to cover that. This is about the death of music celebrity. And what I mean by that is, what's remarkable to me about the passing of Michael Jackson is it's sort of one of the few large cultural touchstones
mm-hmm.
that we shared universally as a culture. And across a lot of the world as well.
Yep.
And that in our increasingly fractured society, culture, whatever you want to call it, it's becoming more and more rare. And I just want to trace a little bit of what's happened and what I think was the death knell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, follow me. So I named this little subtopic, Goodbye Sister Disco, after a song by The Who, where they were really taunting the demise of disco music and decrying how it was crass and over-commercial, overwrought, oversexed over here. And which is kind of ironic, you know, for a band as big as The Who to be taking jabs at another genre of music.
Right.
But, you know, get over the irony. And they had some good points there, that it really was, you know, after the 60s, where it really was a grassroots, bottom-up type of music, it was kind of taken over by these corporate behemoths, deciders of culture.
Right.
And they said, disco is it. Let's go disco. Let's make money. Let's eat cocaine. And then the 80s happened really on the heels of disco. Like, to me, it was distinct. Like, there was no connection between the two at all. like the music we listened to when we were in, you know, say junior high or in high school, bore no connection. But really, it was the same machine and mindset pumping out just a different product. It wasn't as regimented, you know. Disco became, this is what it is, and this is how you do it. These are the tropes, voila. But, you know, it still worked, and you had a large top 40 culture that more or less people hooked into. MTV came along, helped it along. And this is where Michael Jackson really enters into the picture. He of course, he's always been there through the 70s, but he almost galvanized this idea of built celebrity. Genuine talent, right? But built up really around Thriller. Like they had the formula down for creating an image. And there were other artists as well at the time and before, but that really was, they were able to create this monolith of an icon, an image. And to me, it was all downhill from there, and you had a lot of echoes of it where they tried to replicate it, but of course, other people really didn't have his talent. You did have, like, Wham and George Michael, and they tried to replicate some of that. Madonna, you could say, kind of followed that idea, the image. And then it started to devolve. And you ended up with things like, you know, Milli Vanilli. Not that they were ever trying to build Milli Vanilli up to be superstars on the level of Michael Jackson or Madonna.
But just the idea of a manufactured celebrity. Right. Like, okay, we have the package already. We just need to throw some product into it. It doesn't really matter what the product is, because the packaging is pretty and we know how the packaging works.
Yep. And that was the most, they got caught with their hands in the cookie jar on Milli Vanilli. It was not only that they were backing a subpar product, but that the product was a phony baloney at the base of it.
Right.
Which is why, if you're still with me, it was very easy for grunge and alternative, if you want to call it that, to come along and sweep it off the table. Right? Pretty much did. You know, it took hair metal with it, too. It took a lot of things with it. But that wasn't truly what, to me, was the final death. That certainly swept aside a lot of the artificial pretense. Again, not saying Michael Jackson was not legitimately a superstar. He was. But of that whole mindset. To me, the very last gasp of that mindset, and I believe it will come around again, not saying it's gone forever, is out of this grunge kind of vibe, you know, when everything was more kind of down and you can even say serious, almost this knee-jerk 180 degrees from the happy poppy stuff. It's almost like the record industry said, all right, it's time. It's time to go. It's time to bring it back. People are ready to move a little, to be happy. And they brought a couple of people in, but the one that said that, no, you can't do this. No, this is not going to work. It was Lou Bega. Yes, this whole thing was just one funnel leading to Lou Bega.
Lou Bega was the dregs circling the drain?
Yep. His Mambo Number 5, catchy song. I think they said to themselves, this is it. This is our new horse that we're going to break through the Kool-Aid wall. And that made no sense.
I got it.
Yeah, there are a lot of things happening in that little phrase. And that he was just not the right man at exactly the wrong time. And I guess I remember he was like on the Super Bowl, like after his big hit and the attempted follow-up. And it was, God, it was like watching a meat-filled sock puppet, you know, put in front of, I don't know, how many lumens of light you know.
Yeah.
And the sock puppet did the best it could. It really did. You know, you got to feel
it. But it was never going to be a real boy.
No, exactly. Exactly. So I guess that's my
your thesis
reaction and why I'm, I don't know. I've been kind of annoyed with the coverage of the untimely death. You know, certainly sad for the family, but it's almost like, all right, we did that. We did the whole big celebrity thing, and it was really phony to me in the end. And I think as much as anything, it was that machine that that has twisted a lot of people. So that's what I have to say about that.
Okay, Forrest. Well, that was quite the treatise there.
You like that?
Yeah, that was you certainly took a stand.
Yeah, I'm sticking with it.
you're an Updike for our times.
No, it's all
not Updike. I was thinking Upton Sinclair.
No, I get them mixed up too. Actually, that was another topic that we'll have to save for later, which was. Though our authors and folks that you get mixed up all the time that are completely not the same thing.
Oh, right. Bill Paxton, Bill Pullman.
Yes, exactly. Do you want to take a couple of quick Twitter thingers? And
sure. Let me see what I've got that's quick. Jetang briefly back to sort of a suggestion.
Yep.
As recommended or reminded by the Minimo. Was a link that I'd found that was posted. I first saw it as it was posted by Tom Merritt, who's a podcaster with CNET, from a band whose name I'm going to forget at the moment. The Sons of Something, they're out of Canada, country act that did a song. it all makes sense when you do the Google search. They did a song and a video on YouTube called "United Breaks Guitars." The short version being this guy, band member, was on a plane heading, as they were, boarding the plane, and looks out and he can see the baggage handlers throwing around the guitars for his band, his especially, just, tossing it, whatever happened. And sure enough, his lovely Taylor guitar was ruined, and he began a year-long odyssey of phone calls to various places with United, everyone passing the buck and refusing to take any responsibility. And finally, at a certain point, he said to the last person who told him no that he was going to write three songs about United and how they destroyed his luggage. Then he was going to post them on YouTube, and they said, "You go ahead and do that, sir." So they recorded the first one called "United Breaks Guitars," which I just thought was charming and wonderful and a really well done video. Go run a YouTube search for United Breaks Guitars, repost it, because this is the kind of thing as a traveling musician that really speaks to us. They really make it difficult. What was that?
United has broken my guitar.
Did they actually break your guitar?
Well, they broke the case.
Oh, okay.
They broke the case.
Yeah, which isn't really your guitar.
Well, but it's part of the guitar unit. And I've found them to be less friendly than most other airlines in dealing with instruments.
Uh-huh.
Like, to them, it may as well be like a hissing octopus,
right?
If there were such a thing,
right? But seeing what with the recent to a degree, you can't blame them because the economy hit everyone the same way it did them, especially hard. Yeah. But the airlines have become even more unfriendly to the traveling musician, especially to the traveling guitarist and keyboard player, respectively. And anybody that can get a dig in about it just sort of speaks especially to us. So please...
it's your chance to take it to the man.
Yeah, exactly. On our behalf, take it to the man. And now we're pushing up against 35 minutes, so maybe now is as good a time as any to call the ball. Especially before your computer gives out on us again.
Oh, it did that 15 minutes ago. That whole thing about Lou Bega, it's gone.
That's okay. It was fully scripted.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's see. A couple of gigs coming up that we are happy to announce. I don't have the details on it yet, but August 7th, Friday night, we're going to be at Milk Boy Coffee with our very good friends, the Arrogant Worms, a hilarious music trio out of Canada. We're going to be at Milk Boy Coffee, which is in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia. We'll have details on the website very soon for that. And then on Friday, the 28th of August, we're going to be at Jam and Java in Vienna, Virginia. And then, as it turns out, we thought it was Friday, but in fact, we're going to be the concert at Penny Arcade Expo, PAX, in Seattle on Labor Day weekend. The concert itself is going to be Saturday, the 5th of September.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be a blast, a very good time. We'll probably have more to say about that in the coming weeks. And you can find out everything that there is worth finding out at the website, pollenstorm.com.
Where you can also find out how to join the Pollen Storm Brigade of Minions. Only 12 slots left in the Disciples of Lore. Mm-hmm. Go find out about that and know that I'm Storm.
And I'm Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Watson, come here. I need you.
Go do things.
Just one moment, I can see the pale blue sky.